Music sounds better on 103.2 Dublin City FM.
Majesty's a pretty nice girl, but she doesn't have a lot to say. Majesty's a pretty nice girl, but she changes from day to day. I want to tell her that I love her a lot, but I gotta get a belly full of wine. My Majesty's a pretty nice girl, someday I'm gonna make her mine, oh yeah, someday I'm gonna make her mine.
Dublin City FM, the Sod Show for a glorious Friday afternoon.
Beautiful in Dublin. Friday afternoon in Dublin.
Yes, we've got our city back. It's lovely and clear out there. No roadblocks.
No roadblocks. Well, I was North Dublin, Brian. Sorry, I'm Brian Green. He's Peter Donegan, etc. But I was gardening North County Dublin.
You were away from it all.
I was entirely away from it all. I chose not to even dream of booking in anything around South County Dublin, south side of Dublin city centre. Just kept it all north side.
Well, there will be a Majesty theme running through today's programme.
Will there?
There will. We had the Beatles there. From which album is...
Oh, that's the White Album.
The White Album.
It was Abbey Road. Abbey Road. My apologies. Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. If you would like to correct us on that and any other matter, you can, of course, do so by text 087-977-1032. You can telephone 01865-8020. Or you can, in fact, get us on Twitter and just use the hashtag Sodshow.
The Beatles had a White Album, a Red Album and a Blue Album.
No, the Blue and the Red were compilations, yeah, as my good friend Mick Nugent will tell me. Yeah. I did a Magical Mystery Tour in Liverpool, actually, quite worthwhile. Saw Strawberry Fields.
You know too much. We'll have to get rid of you. On today's programme, we have the Sod Show Outdoors series continues and we have Jason Roberts.
Legend.
And he will be talking about beekeeping. I'll tell you now, and I'll tell you again when it's coming up, that we're going to play the first 8 minutes of his talk, which is 36 minutes long. You've got to go to the podcast after the show and check out the whole thing, because it is just a fascinating story about him and his beekeeping. That's coming up in a few minutes' time. We'll have our tool and plant for the week, work for the week, and we'll also have our song of the week, which is getting quite controversial, but it'll be
in
theme with the show and content is in the show today. We'll also be doing some more kind of outdoor focused things, and we'll be talking about some of Dublin's greater gardens and parks, and we're going to be looking this week at the National War Memorial Gardens in Island Bridge.
Yeah, I've just had a note in from Muzak LLC from Fort Mill. Where's Fort Mill?
Fort Mill, I know where Fourth Lawn is. That's out in Dublin West, isn't it?
I think you're talking somewhere kind of states-ish direction. I'm told the song we should choose is Where the Green Grass Grows by Tim McGraw.
Tim McGraw. Why is that name familiar?
I haven't a clue, Brian.
Tim McGraw. Isn't McGraw the name of Dr. Phil? Isn't he McGraw?
Back to gardening.
Back to... Fourth Mill is in South Carolina, we're told in our ears. Okay. They're listening to us in South Carolina on the stream. Way amazing. Now, what we're going to do is go outdoors, then get back indoors and get to our tool and plant of the week. So just give this an introduction. Give me the significance of this guy and his passion for bees.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I always noted that I grew up growing plants under my bed kind of thing. You know, I was 5 years of age. I'd started at that. And I think Jason he's the first person I've ever met who's had an interest in something along the lines of beekeeping, who started, you might say, at a similar era. He got into it from a kind of a childhood age. And he constantly refers back to that. So even from a financial point of view, to how you do it, to the simplicities of it, I think he just makes it extremely intriguing. From that, you know, he's also not a member of any association, which makes it really, really, really basic. But he's the first person I've ever met, Brian, who actually made me want to turn around and get into beekeeping or even take a greater interest in it as a result.
And I have a similar story, which I'll tell you at the other end of this. Let's go outside. Let's go out in the country. It's the Sod Show outside Old Bridge Country Fair, County Meath. Today's talk, Jason Roberts, and a fascinating insight into beekeeping.
What I'm going to say to you has actually changed from listening to the previous speakers, because I'm listening to everybody and I'm thinking, oh God, that's relevant, and this is relevant, and what you're saying really strikes a chord with me. So I'm probably going to wander off on a few tangents here or whatever. Just bear with me, and I hope it will make some sense to you. I have a little bag of tricks here, and I have a few other bits and pieces. But really, I'm going to talk to you about my own experience of beekeeping, and some of what the people were saying earlier on is that there's really no right or wrong way of doing this. And I think what's coming through as well is that enthusiasm is the key, and an interest. You know, and you can make up a lot of this stuff as you go along as well. And what's really come through from the two ladies that were talking is that nature will find a way, regardless of your best efforts to destroy things or to put barriers in their way. Nature will come through and look after itself. And I'm actually finding it's the same with the bees. Despite my best efforts, they seem to be doing okay. I suppose I ought to split this up into two little elements of the talk. I'll give you a quick run through the history of beekeeping, and then I'll give you beekeeping from my own point of view and how I got involved with it. Beekeeping has been around, or interest in bees has been around for as long as there have been human beings. If you go to Spain, there are caves with wall paintings in them of Neolithic men getting honey out of wild hives, you know, just surrounded by swarms of bees. People have always had an interest in bees. They've had an interest in this lovely liquid that comes out of beehives. It's fantastic. Liquid gold. It's honey. And since then, beekeeping has undergone continuous development. But it took one major leap in the 1700s, 1800s. But up until that point, people pretty much kept bees purely out of interest, because they wanted honey, their own honey. It was the only natural sweetener that was available before sugar beet and sugar cane started to be processed. So you would keep bees so that you had this nice sweetener for your food. Honey also has medicinal purposes, I suppose, that people would keep, you know, that they would use the honey for. In medieval times, beekeeping was very important, extremely important, because the wax from the bees was used for candles in churches. Beeswax gives the most magnificent light. It's so much better than tallow or the artificial waxes you can get. It gives a beautiful radiance, and you can imagine these beautiful churches in medieval times, and they're lit up by hundreds of these candles. Absolutely fantastic to behold. And the only way you can get this wax is if you keep the bees. So monasteries in medieval times probably would have been the main beekeepers. They would use the honey for medicinal purposes. They would use the honey for making mead. They were great brewers, the monks. They used to drink a heck of a lot, probably because the water wasn't fantastic in those days. You know, it's safer to drink the beer and the mead. But they would use the beeswax for making candles. The problem with beekeeping in olden days was that it wasn't very methodical. There wasn't real management to it. It was literally a case of, we've got bees, we'll take the product off of it at the end of the season, and then we'll see what happens next year. There was no real understanding of what was going on with the life cycle of bees, what was happening with the products of the bees. They had no idea about this pollination lark that we're into these days. So the reasons for beekeeping in the past were slightly different to what they are now. It was light, it was beer or mead, and it was sweetness. Okay? When they were keeping bees, they used to keep them in straw skeps. You've all seen them on the front of honey jars or little candles and stuff. They're these wonderful little sort of dome-shaped straw contraptions. And the bees would be kept in those. The bees would look after themselves. They'd do whatever they want. At the end of the season, when they wanted the honey out of these things or the wax out of them, they would basically destroy the colony of bees in order to get the honey and the wax. So there was no continuation of your stock of bees. You'd keep a few hives ready for next year, let them swarm, they'd multiply, you'd get a few more together, end of the season, you'd kill them off again. The problem with this is that they usually took the heaviest of the skeps, the heaviest of the hives, because they're the ones with the most honey, the most wax. Kill the bees, take the product. Unfortunately, in doing that, they were killing their best stocks of bees. So what they were left with at the end of the year was the weaker ones. So there is this theory that over the years, you had this degradation in bee stamina, I suppose. You know, bees' resistance to disease, bees' ability to work. Best ones are getting killed off, weakest ones are surviving. But that was grand, it worked. Beekeeping didn't happen on a commercial scale. It couldn't possibly happen on a commercial scale when it was done like that. No management and killing your bees at the end of the year. Round about 1790, there was this gentleman, I can't remember his name now, I think he was a French chap. He invented this hive where it had movable frames, where he could actually control the bees and how they worked and the insides of the hives. And it was called the leaf hive. It literally was like the pages of a book. It was a box and you could open it up and there'd be frames of wax in there and bees on it. Then there'd be another one and you could open it up and you could have a look. That was grand. You could see what was going on in the hive. You still had a difficulty getting the produce out of the hive. You still had a difficulty managing the bees. In 1851, an American gentleman by the name of Longstroth, I think that's how you pronounce his name, discovered this fantastic thing, any way you like, you know. discovered this amazing little thing about bees is that they have this thing called bee space. It's about, there's a half an inch, a quarter of an inch. I've got a feeling it's about a quarter of an inch. If a bee has a space of any more than a quarter of an inch, they'll fill it with comb. If it's any smaller than a quarter of an inch, they'll use this thing called propolis, bee glue, to bung it up, to stop drafts and stuff like that, and to hold things together. So you give them a space of about a quarter of an inch, they're kind of, oh, we're happy with this, we'll walk around in here and we can do our bits and pieces. So what he could do with this little bit of knowledge, this thing, he made this major leap, this huge leap in terms of beekeeping. He realized that you can actually create a removable frame hive. You could create a hive that has frames in it that you can put wax into, that the bees can build wax into, and you can take them out. And if you space them correctly, a quarter of an inch between the frames, the bees aren't going to gum them up. They're not going to join them together with wax. They're not going to stick them down with propolis or fill in the spaces between them. So in 1851, you had this, from this tiny little discovery, you had this colossal leap in beekeeping. Suddenly, you could have beekeeping on a commercial scale, as you see nowadays. I mean, it really all started in about 1851. Really, 1851 marks the line between two different types of beekeeping. Old-fashioned beekeeping, modern beekeeping. The old-fashioned reasons for beekeeping, as I said, honey and wax, okay? Modern beekeeping, the reasons for keeping bees have kind of changed slightly. Still, people think the main reason for keeping bees is for the honey. It probably is for most people. If you're a home beekeeper, you want the honey out of it. That's the main reason for doing it. The wax is a fantastic product from beekeeping. Ladies, if you look, gentlemen as well, depends. If you want to have a look in your cosmetics drawer when you go home, Peter, you will probably find that there is beeswax in your products somewhere. The world's largest consumer of beeswax, commercial consumer of beeswax, is the cosmetics industry these days. And some people, depending on who you talk to, they will say that the beeswax is probably a more valuable product of the hive than the actual honey itself. You're gonna find me out in the country.
You're gonna find me way out in the country. 103.2 Dublin City FM Sod Show, and Jason Roberts and his beekeeping.
What a legend.
He is so into what he does. Passion.
It's a pure, raw passion, to be honest. The funny thing, though, and I was saying to Jason afterwards, you know, there's points in time where it doesn't make financial sense to do what you do when it's purely for the love of, but it's damn good fun.
He does explain later in the recording, and we'll be putting the whole thing up in the middle of the week on the blog, which we'll tell you details about at the end of the show, that you're not going to make any money out of this. You're just going to make some wonderful honey.
No, it's, well, yeah, no, you won't. But it's, isn't it great though? Isn't it absolutely great? Particularly for kids. That's the funny thing about it. And the funny thing, as Jason does say, is the main reason why people stay away from it is because they believe they're going to get stung, and there's this whole fear of bees and whatever the case may be. But as you said, the only reason a bee will sting you is if you're standing in its flight path. And I like that theory that he's travelling at 40, 60 miles an hour. and you're standing in its way, breaks.
Something he didn't go into, because he was among gardeners at this fair, I'm sure, and I'm not the gardener, as you know, on this show, that the bees are very important for the pollination. They go from flower to flower, and they mix it and match it and make flowers bloom.
It is phenomenal if you wish to talk to... I mean, you talk to somebody like Jane Paris, and she will tell you just how big a role they play in us planting an apple tree and having fruit on the table. To the very, very simplistic example of just an apple on a table, Brian, but it is phenomenal the role that they play in our daily lives, you know. But it's hugely important, and we did say it a couple of weeks ago, that if you are getting into the grow your own thing, if you're getting into beekeeping, it's one thing to have the fruit trees and take the fruit and constantly take the fruit. But my attitude is always, if I'm going to plant one that I'm going to take something from, then I'm going to plant one that I might get less from. So, for example, the lilac trees, as we had, was planted a week there, 2-3 weeks ago, just to attract them in, to give them another reason to come apart from fruit trees. So, you know.
Another thing he mentioned, and then I'll leave it, is that he said a bee does not want to sting you, because if it stings you, it will die. Unlike a wasp who can sting and sting and sting and not
will
die.
Yeah. Sting and sting and sting.
The bee, he says the bee knows it doesn't want to sting you because it knows it will die if it stings you. Amazing stuff. Let's go to tool and plant of the week.
Plant of the week. Oh God, yeah, if you were watching my YouTube vid or the blog there earlier this week, I put up a post on the palm trees that got whopped out of it over the course of the elongated winter that we had. A winter of discontent, one might say. And the Cordyline australis is the most common palm tree that seems to have got hit. I don't know how many of them I've taken and removed out of people's gardens. Most people held off to see would have come back. The
is
video
this
explains
like damage to the tree due to wind, or is there a disease?
No, this is because, well, partly because of -18, -16 Celsius that we had, and the duration of that low temperature.
You can't fight nature. Palm trees aren't supposed to be around these parts, are they?
Well, maybe there's a maybe there's
island in the sun. I don't think so.
Me and Brian fall out for many reasons. One of them is music. But no, on a serious note, I think palm, anything kind of piece of laughing here in front of me, I'm going to throw my pen at him. But no, palm trees, Cordyline australis being the big one, or the most common one that has been in the country, and also the likes of the Formium, which are the palmy grasses, as some might describe them. I don't know many of them. I've literally removed within the last 2-3 weeks. Bloody phenomenal, pardon my French. However, If you are looking for a plant of the week, I would replace a Cordyline if you can get your hand on it.
Pressing you for tool of the week.
It has to be my Falco Secateurs.
Is that on your left hip?
That's on my right hip.
On your right hip.
On my right hip. I have a holster for my Secateurs, as most good gardeners
do. If you'd have been stopped at a roadblock today, they wouldn't have let you through with that.
It's a Secateurs. It's a scissors for plants, for want of a better description. But they are the Vorsprung Dirk technique of Secateurs. So if you're going to buy one, buy a Falco.
Give us the brand name again.
Falco, F-E-L-C-O.
And you'll get that.
They haven't paid, and they're not sponsoring the sod show. It's just I've had this one. It's a bit like Trigger Sweep and Brush, I'm reminded. I've had 15 different handles, 22 different hinges, and 14 different blades, but still the same Secateurs I've had since I was 22.
We're going to Song of the Week, and it is your choice again.
Oh, what did I pick?
You picked something from the White Album, because we've had Abbey Road, and we're going to the White
Album.
Ah,
yes. Well, it was down to Jason's thing, so we were looking for a honey team and a queen team.
Yes, so we went for
Honey Pie.
Honey Pie.
From the White Album, yes. I have it on vinyl.
She was a working girl, north of England way. Now she's hit the big time. In the USA. And if she could only hear me, this is what I'd say. Honey pie, you are making me crazy. I'm in love but I'm lazy. So won't you please come home? Oh, honey pie, my position is tragic. Come and show me the magic of your Hollywood song. You became a legend
silver screen. And now the thought of meeting you makes me weak in the knee. Oh, honey pie, you are driving me frantic. Sail across the Atlantic to be where you belong. Honey pie, come back to me. So won't you please come home, come, come back to me, honey pie.
Honey pie, honey pie. 103.2 Dublin City FM, and it's the Sod Show for a Friday afternoon. We're here every Friday, 3 p.m. till 3:30.
You can get in touch with us in the following ways. Text number 087-977-1032. On Twitter, you can use the hashtag Sodshow, S-O-D-S-H-O-W. And
you've got a couple of announcements, have
you? Oh, a couple of announcements. Yes, actually, I'm looking at doing a garden group get-together. More details will be on the blog and that later. But in the meantime, if you'd like a taster of what I'm proposing, a lovely lady called Anne Lynch, based out in Ballybohol, is looking at doing a taster of the Slina Sciocca, the Hedgerow Walk. Takes place this Sunday, 3 p.m. Also, the Adventure Weekend is on in the RDS this weekend. I think they did the press opening today, but we couldn't make it. We had a side show to prepare for. My apologies on that one. Believe it's supposed to be a cracking, absolutely cracking event. I'm hoping to get there, but anything from bog snorkeling to Michael Schumacher's cars are supposed to be there. There's the wind tunnel, all of that kind of stuff. You know, you pretend you're jumping out of a parachute. Everything is there.
If I was to say Chelsea, what would you be talking about?
Chelsea Flower Show is on, yes, 24th to the 28th of May, all weekend. I'm sure the BBC will be covering it like it's no tomorrow, as they do always. And also, what you will find is Bloom in the Phoenix Park, our own garden show, is coming up the following of the June bank holiday weekend. As a by the way, and on that note, there's a lady called Birgitta. She runs the Burren Smokehouse, and she supplied the salmon to the Queen's starters, I believe, to the meal that they had in Dublin Castle.
Very nice.
Yes, you'll find Birgitta will be exhibiting at Bloom. I had a taste of her salmon last year. Loved the organic one. Super stuff.
On Wednesday, I don't know if anybody caught this, but the Queen was here in Dublin and she went to the National War Memorial Gardens. In Island Bridge. And what I find significant about this is I live in Dublin all my life and I was never encouraged to know about it, go to it, went on a school tour. Absolutely not. Never knew it was there. And looking at it, it is some garden. Tell us about it.
Well, funnily enough, when I started the garden group, I think it was 2 years ago now, the first garden group gig ever was to the War Memorial Park on Island Bridge. I'll tell you something about it, Brian. I'd put it in my top 10 list of parks for very good reason. Free in, free parking. If you can lay your hands on one of the gardeners or the park ranger, they'll give you a free tour. You can also walk into what they call the Four Provinces, which are the four pillars of the upper gardens. You can walk in, you can see the old records, the old archives of all of the lists of all of the names of those who fought in World War One.
Tell me something, when they were building it,
yes,
they didn't use anything mechanical.
Entirely built by hand. Well, because I worked there, I've got a greater, I suppose, knowledge of this one. But yeah, entirely built by hand. And I'll tell you what's phenomenal. When you look at the high cross in the centre of the gardens, heading out towards the Inchicore side of it, I still wonder to this day how that was done by horse and cart. I mean, you look at the pyramids and you wonder, but you look at this cross and you kind of go, this is solid, solid, solid granite.
They pulled it with ropes and things. Just when they opened it, they said, it is with a spirit of confidence that we commit this noble memorial of Irish valour to the care and custody of the Irish government or the government of Ireland. And then what did they do for 50 years? Nothing. It was hidden under a rock. We didn't know we had it, really.
Well, it's a funny thing, though, Brian. I remember when I was 17, I'm born and reared Dublin, just about born and bred, apart from a quick stint in Cundé Kildare. But, I mean, I didn't know that it was real there until I actually started working there.
Can I suggest that people's work for the week, for the non-experts at least, is get yourself down there and have a look at the gardens?
Well, you can't. I'll tell you something for free. After a state visit, any park, any state visit, it is the best time to go and see it in its fullest glory. And I have to say, a huge bullabus round of applause to the staff of the Office of Public Works. Not only have they looked after me and my group when we went there personally, but for the work that they have done, by God, did it look absolutely stunning on television
this
week.
What you're saying is, not only is there a smell of paint, but also there's some wonderful flowers were put in for her good self.
No, you'll find very little. No, the big thing about the War Memorial Park and Island Bridge is the collection of roses that they have there, and also the Avenue Walk is just stunning, and especially then down by the water.
Can we settle with that being the work for the week? It's so easy. Just Dublin people, get out and look at that park. And if you can't get to that park, go to some park this weekend. How's about that work?
And let us know how you get on in that park, please.
Yes, indeed. You can catch us on Twitter, #sodshow, and you get the blog. Where's that?
That's blog.donaghanlandscaping.com, or just Google the Sod Show and you'll find it.
Are we in iTunes?
We're in iTunes. Actually, we were number 13 in the sports and recreation last night, and we were also number 1 in the outdoor What's Hot section in iTunes.
They're playing our music. It's time to go. We'll be back next Friday with another cracking Sod Show for you.
Whatever you do, have a great weekend in the great outdoors. Take care. Bye for now.
Bye.